Is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Tonight, a program that affects all of us in one way or another. There are well over 100 nuclear power plants in this country, and there could very well be many, many more constructed. What does that mean? What does it mean when you live next to one of these? As you well know, there have been some severe problems in the past. Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania, Chernobyl, problems and plants all around this country. Are they safe? In a moment, our guest, scientist David Lochbaum on Coast to Coast AM. David Lochbaum is a nuclear safety engineer for the Union of Concerned Scientists. He has more than 17 years of experience in commercial nuclear power plants, startup testing, operations, licensing, software development, training, design, and engineering. Prior to joining UCS in 1996, David served as a senior engineer for Enercon Services, system engineer for General Technical Services, reactor engineer and shift technical advisor for the Tennessee Valley Authority, instructor for General Electric, and junior engineer for Georgia Power. Mr. Lochbaum received a Bachelor of Science in Nuclear Engineering from the University of Tennessee in 1979. He's been a member of the American Nuclear Society since 1978. In addition, David has written numerous articles on various aspects of nuclear safety and publishing books entitled Nuclear Waste Disposal Crisis and Fission Stories. He's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Hello, David. How are you?
Good, George. Thanks for having me on your program.
My pleasure. Very special topic indeed for all of us. How many up and running nuclear power plants do we have in this country right now?
Today we have 103 nuclear power plants in the United States that contribute about 20% of our electricity.
What's the age of those things?
They vary from the youngest one is 20-some years old, and the oldest one is pushing 40.
Is 40 pretty old for a power plant like that?
They were designed for 40 years and licensed for 40 years. None have ever operated longer than that, so they're all pushing new grounds every day they operate.
What happens after we get to that 40-year point?
Well, the bad news is that unlike people who, as they age, tend to see healthcare professionals more often to maintain
a little maintenance. That's right.
Nuclear power plants see less doctors or the equivalent of doctors today than they did 5 years ago in order to save some money.
Not a good sign, David, for all of us.
Well, as long as the gamble pays off, then it works okay. If it ever comes up empty, then it's a big price tag to pay.
Now, these 103 plants, are they scattered all around the country, or is there a certain region that has more than another?
Most of them are located in the northeast and southeast. There's fewer in the far west. There's a couple in California, one plant in Arizona, but most of them are in the northeast and southeast.
If 100% is the total power, obviously, in the United States, what percent of power, then, do these 103 plants contribute to?
They've been, for the last decade or so, they've been hanging in pretty constant at around 20%.
20% of the entire power that consumption that we use in this country are coming from these nuclear power plants. So what about the other 80%? Where are we getting our power?
The largest share comes from fossil-fired generation, both coal and natural gas, and a little bit of oil. There's some hydropower, a smaller and smaller amount coming from hydroelectric dams, and the rest is coming from renewable technologies, biomass, more and more coming from wind turbines, solar power, and fuel cells.
Gosh, I would have thought that the consumption of nuclear power from these plants would have been much higher than that. That's pretty low after all these years, isn't it?
Well, there was a plan 30 years ago in the Nixon administration to have 1,000 nuclear power plants by the year 2000.
Oh, my God.
We came up about 900 shy of that.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
Well, if you're, I was working in the nuclear power industry. That's a bad thing if you're trying to derive money from it. It's maybe a good thing if it was going to be built in your backyard.
Let's talk a little bit about you. I mean, you have a lot of experience in nuclear power startups and testing. We're going to talk with you about some of that and the safety of these plants. Now you're a safety engineer for the Union of Concerned Scientists. Have you changed your views at all over the years?
A little bit. When I joined the industry 25 years ago and went to work in the nuclear power plants, I felt that safety was such a foremost thought, that the defense in depth and so many things had to go wrong for an accident to occur, that it wasn't likely to happen. Then you start seeing things like Three Mile Island and Chernobyl and some of the experience situations I encountered during my career, and I find out that there is a lot of safety built into the nuclear power plants, but just as a safety chain is dictated by its weakest link, at too many plants, that weakest link is too close to the surface.
Well, and I was going to say, if we're only getting 20% of our power from these 103 plants, for the risk in the return, doesn't sound like that's very balanced. I mean, it doesn't sound like a good investment. How easy, then, would it be to shut these plants down and replace that 20% that we're getting from them?
Well, it would be difficult to do overnight because 20% is a sizable portion, so it would be somewhat disruptive for anybody to order the plant shut down tomorrow.
Would conservation help?
Conservation would help. And also, what UCS advocates is that as these nuclear power plants reach the end of their operating lifetimes, the 40 years, that they shut down and they're replaced by technologies that provide the same economic, environmental benefits, but without the risk of a catastrophic accident involved.
Just a few weeks ago, there was a problem at the Fermi 2 power plant near Detroit, near Toledo, right about in the middle, a little closer to the Toledo side in Monroe. Have you heard anything since? I mean, what's going on with that plant now?
They actually had a cooling system inside the containment building, sprung a leak. And initially, they didn't know exactly where the water was. They had some instruments in the plant that were detecting the buildup of water in the basement, and they weren't sure exactly where that water was coming from. So they conservatively assumed it was coming from the reactor and shut down. When they later sent some people in there to sample the water, they found out it was coming from a secondary system that was providing cooling, basically the air conditioning, for the containment. And
so what could have been a problem was nothing, really?
In that case, it wasn't. You know, 20 years ago at a plant outside of New York City, that same type of leak went undetected for many, many weeks. It basically allowed the containment to flood up to about 9 feet of water.
Oh, my God.
And covered up a lot of safety equipment. The motors don't work real well when they're underwater.
No, and not at all.
They didn't find out until a lot of equipment would have been disabled due to being underwater.
Hey, David, take us through, if you can, a visual presentation through a nuclear power plant. I mean, what would we see if we were going on a tour of these things? What are those huge stacks up there for? What do they do? And just kind of explain how this whole thing would work.
Sure. Many nuclear power plants are most evident by two things from the outside. One is the big concrete stacks. The second are the power lines radiating out from the nuclear power plant. As you drive close to a facility, you generally see those two things first. The tall concrete stacks are used to dissipate the heat, the waste heat from the nuclear power plant to the environment. All of the nuclear power plants are located close to an ocean, river, or or lake, because for every unit of electricity they produce, they waste 2 units of electricity. They're only about 30% efficient.
Well, that's not very good, is it?
Well, it's about, for that type of technology, that's about the best you can get.
All right.
So they must dissipate a huge amount of water or huge amount of heat to the environment. That the concrete stacks help them do that. They're basically chimneys. When you get closer to the plant, the first thing you notice is a security fence, much like around a prison or anything like that. There's a tall fence topped with razor wire, infrared cameras, and all this stuff.
And let's hope they're very secure, but I'm not so sure. We'll talk about that later, too.
That's true. There was a plant in Connecticut a few years ago that had a windstorm and blew the fence open, and they didn't notice it for a while.
So. Oh, God.
But once you go through security, and if you're authorized...
Are these armed guards?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Yes, they are. If you get through that process on the inside, first thing it looks like is any industrial enterprise. There are large concrete buildings, housing, industrial equipment, turbines, pumps, motors, and things like that. As you wander through the plant, it's a very large, you know, 7-story tall buildings. One thing that surprises a lot of people when they go through a nuclear power plant is how clean they are. People often look at nuclear power and may think it's held together with duct tape and baling wire.
That's not true. Okay. They're pretty pristine, aren't they?
Yeah, one of the reasons they're so clean is because of the radiation that's present. The plants are painted almost all the time because paint provides a good seal against radiation seeping into concrete and other parts of the plant. So to keep down the radiation dose to workers, they're painted all the time. There used to be a joke that if you stood still for more than 30 seconds, you'd be painted somewhere. So it also kept you from standing still in a nuclear power plant. But a lot of the plant you can't get into when it's operating because of the radiation levels. So there are parts of the plant that are only accessible when the plant shuts down for refueling.
Okay, so a lot of parts of the plant, then, you're saying, are sealed off, huh?
That's correct.
All right.
It's either controlled access, so operators and people conducting tests can go in there for a brief amount of time to inspect whatever they're looking at. But a lot of the plants you only see every 18 months to 2 years when you do refueling.
The heat that is being emitted from the stacks that we see, the stacks that you see when you're flying in a plane, you can see them. They're huge. Any dangers there? Is it putting anything into the environment we shouldn't be breathing?
No, those are actually simply just water vapor.
That's it. Okay.
Because of that water, the huge amounts of water that's being used to cool the reactor, if a leak develops, the systems are designed so that water leaks into the plant rather than contaminated water leaking out of the plant. So what you see is actually not the danger. It's what you can't see that's the danger.
All right. Now, we've got 103 plants. How about Canada? What do they have?
Canada has a smaller amount there in the 20 or 30 power plants. They're about the same age as ours, but they're just a more modest fleet.
All right. Now, tell me about the reactors in one of these things. What does a reactor do?
A reactor, basically, its purpose is to heat up water. And it does that by splitting uranium or plutonium atoms. When those atoms split or fission, they release tremendous amounts of heat. That heat is used to warm up water that's then used to produce steam. The steam spins a turbine generator that makes the electricity. That steam is then cooled back down into water and then reused in a recycle to do that process over and over again.
In Chernobyl, what happened there?
Well, Chernobyl was a 4-reactor nuclear power plant in the Ukraine, outside of Kiev in the former Soviet Union. In 1986, the workers there were conducting a test of a backup safety system. Even though nuclear power plants make electricity, they need electricity themselves when they're shut down in order to power safety equipment and other essential safety systems. So the workers at Chernobyl were testing a backup electrical system to see how long it could provide electricity to the safety equipment in case their connection with the electrical grid was interrupted.
All right, it was just a test.
Just a test. And it was an admirable, but commendable reason for doing a test is to hopefully improve your safety levels. In doing that test, they wanted to test that one specific backup system. so they disabled a whole bunch of other safety systems so they could focus on how this one system being tested worked. When the test went awry and it went down a pathway they had anticipated, because they had disabled all these other backup safety systems, they were in a very bad position. The power level of the plant went from about 7% of full power to over 1,000% of full power in a matter of seconds.
Oh, my.
And that massive power increase, an uncontrolled power increase, vaporized the water that had been used to cool the reactor.
Now, what caused the explosions, David?
That huge amount of energy in a short period of time just vaporized the water that's being used to cool the reactor. That steam explosion, that turning water into steam in a matter of seconds, or fractions of a second, actually, caused a steam explosion that literally blew the building apart. Once the building was blown apart, like, it wasn't a mushroom cloud, but it was still a very massive explosion.
So what, 30 people died almost instantly?
Yeah, there were 31 people died in short order due to the workers. You know, many of those deaths also were the firefighters who responded, the plant firefighters who responded to try to put out the fire that was caused, and they were basically on a suicide mission. They didn't put out the fire, and they paid a high price for trying.
What killed them, the radiation or the explosions?
The explosion killed one worker. Some falling parts of the plant fell on him and crushed him. The rest died due to intense radiation exposure. Some right away, and some lingered a few weeks in hospitals outside of Moscow.
All right, if you're zapped with radiation like that, I mean, you go in, you're healthy, you don't see it, right?
That's right.
Obviously. You're zapped. What happens to you?
It's basically like being cooked in a microwave.
Oh, my God.
The radiation kills your organs on the inside. It damages cells. Depending on what those cells are, the muscle or organs basically stop. Depending on how much radiation you got, that cell death is quick enough that you expire, or the death of those cells causes infection, and then the infection kills you. But it's not a way to go.
How many people, David, ultimately died because of the Chernobyl mishap? And I assume they're still dying.
There are. The deaths, I've seen estimates anywhere from a few thousand up to like 100,000 deaths. The difficulty in establishing an exact number, like a death toll for the recent tsunami, is that the deaths aren't instantaneous. Depending on your age and how much exposure you experienced, your death can take anywhere from a year to several years for the various cancers to manifest and claim their victims.
And what about the fallout in subsequent countries? How far out did this go?
The radioactive cloud from Chernobyl was sensed by our nuclear power plants as it circled the globe.
You mean with our equipment, we picked up the radiation from that plant?
Yeah, we could see that radioactive cloud as it passed our plants in this country. The radiation...
So we got hit with it too, you're saying?
Yes. We could detect it. I don't know that there are any victims in the United States because the level of the radiation...
Who would know? But who would know?
That's true.
Somebody comes down, some area comes down with cancer. Who knows?
That's true. If anybody in the United States did, then the rest of the world, which received much higher exposure than we did, suffered a higher toll. For example, there were, in the country of Norway, the radiation levels there were so high that the government didn't allow reindeer to be eaten for many years afterwards because the radioactivity collected in the reindeer meat.
We almost had a Chernobyl in 1979 at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania. That could have been a disaster. What are the possibilities, David, of a Chernobyl-type accident occurring here in this country?
Well, the exact sequence of events that happened at Chernobyl was virtually impossible to happen at our plants because we have different type of reactors, and that exact scenario can't be repeated here. However, the general causes, the complacency, the disabling safety systems intentionally when the plant is up and running, those kinds of things are present in our plants today. A few years ago, the Davis-Bessey plant outside of Toledo, Ohio, was found to have a football-sized hole in its reactor vessel head caused by years of neglect. Basically, boric acid had been leaking out at that plant over a period of 6 years. The owner just ignored repeated warning signs and allowed that acid to eat a hole in the head. And they actually came to within, the NRC estimated, about 5 months away from having a very serious accident, much worse than Three Mile Island, simply due to neglect.
When we come back, David, I'm going to ask you what the Union of Concerned Scientists would do, what they would recommend. Do we do away with all these 103 plants? And then, as you say, slowly replace it with some other forms of energy. I'd like to find out from you on what other forms of energy that would be. A little bit later on, we'll open up the phone lines, give you an opportunity to talk with David Lochbaum about the nuclear power. And yes, we're going to talk about the safety of these plants, not from the power they put out, but from the terrorists who want to get in. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Our guest tonight is David Lochbaum. We're talking about nuclear power and safety. And look, I am not going to give any terrorists a blueprint because I have no idea what they do know, what they do not know about our own power plants and our own safety. Quite frankly, with this vast program that goes worldwide, I have no idea who might be listening to us tonight. But we will talk about some of those aspects in a moment. I want to tell you about the After Dark CD, which is the only CD I shall ever do in my hopefully lengthy career as host of Coast to Coast AM. This is it. It's the After Dark CD, and you can get it by going to www.afterdarkcd.com. Two CDs rolled into one nice package of bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, and some very classic ghost stories. So you can get it right off the website at afterdarkcd.com, or you can call this toll-free number, 800-598-2331. You may be shocked at how affordable this is, but I didn't set the price. If I did, it would have cost you thousands. 800, no, I'm kidding, 800-598-2331. David, the French generate a higher percentage of its electrical use from nuclear power than we do. Do they have a different mindset than we have?
Yes, they do. The French generate about 70 to 75% of their electricity from nuclear power plants. But the French approach is different than ours. They have about 55 nuclear power plants as opposed to our 103.
Okay, but they have smaller landmass, right?
Smaller landmass. Of their reactors, they only basically have three reactor types that they then manufactured in mass quantity. So there's about 20 or so of each type of reactor operating. All of our 103 nuclear power plants are different. They're like snowflakes. No two are alike.
Mm-hmm.
Like snowflakes, too, they can melt if they get too hot. But in France, because they've standardized their designs, when a problem comes up that wasn't anticipated, they can put a lot more research and development money into studying the solution to it because it pays for itself 20 times over.
And then fix all of them or do whatever they have to do.
That's correct.
It's almost like a recall of some car.
Yeah.
One part takes care of, you know, the problem.
That's right. Whereas in our plants, it's much more complicated because the fix at plant A may not work at plant B and so on, and it's a much more cumbersome process in order to solve a problem. In some respects, our U.S. Navy, that has a lot of nuclear reactors for submarines and surface ships, is more like the French program, that they have standardized designs that when a problem comes up, they can pursue a more expedient fix than we can on our commercial nuclear power plants.
Have we had more nuclear power plant problems in this country than the mainstream media tells us about, in that we have to find out either from sources or someone calls us and we put it on this program, for example?
Yes, there are literally thousands of problems reported every year. We did a paper a few years ago comparing the chances, the sequence of events that could lead up to a nuclear accident, comparing it to a slot machine. There are three things that have to go wrong in order to have a very bad nuclear accident. You have to have some initiating event like a pipe break or fire. That has to be complicated by an equipment failure and also an operator error. If you look at Chernobyl and Three Mile Island and the wind scale at the United Kingdom, all three of those things occurred. Every year in the United States, thousands of events occur. So each one of those wheels is coming up periodically in the United States. Sometimes two of them are for a specific site.
When three happens, then we got a real problem.
When three happens, we have Three Mile Island. Our concern is that the way to minimize all three coming up is reduce the number of times each wheel comes up, and that's the best way you can reduce the chances of all three showing up at the same time.
What does the organization that you represent, Union of Concerned Scientists, and let me also ask you, who are these people?
Union of Concerned Scientists is a nonprofit public interest group. We were formed back in 1969. One of our earliest focuses was on nuclear power plant safety, and that's remained a focus of the organization over that time. Over those 30-plus years, one of the consistent themes that we see is that the government entity charged with protecting the public from nuclear power plant operation, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, isn't as consistently effective as it needs to be. In other words, the cop on the beat isn't quite what it should be. And that's, if we had a chance to change anything to improve protection of Americans, we would make that agency more effective than it is today.
Now, what would you recommend through the Union of Concerned Scientists as power? Would you recommend, if you had a wish list, would you recommend no nuclear power plants, do away with all of them?
Yeah, well, we've done a number of studies of how to meet future energy needs and still meet global warming, address global warming issues and whatnot. Our vision of that future is one that has nuclear power plants phased out, coal-fired plants phased out, and increased dependence of energy efficiency. So whatever you use to make your electricity, you don't waste any more than is necessary. And for the energy that you do produce, have it come from renewable energy technologies that are better choices than what we had 30 years ago, 40 years ago when we turned to the atom.
What are the possibilities of every house, for example, having some small solar device, something like that, generate their own power, and then put the rest back on the grid to be used for other people. Can we do that, where at least in your own house, you got a power source?
The chances of everyone is probably slim, but we can get to the point where far more of solar energy radiant on the United States is consumed rather than wasted. I think we're moving towards that day, and what our group and others are trying to do is hasten the development of that technology. There's many other applications, too. We're seeing some development in other countries where on carports to provide shade over macadam parking lots are solar panels, so that those shades protect the surface of cars and things like that. In addition, they generate electricity for the building, and any surplus goes back into the grid.
You know, what they need to do, too, because I think the units are, you can do it in your house, but right now it's pretty expensive.
Right.
I mean, it would take 25 years maybe to break even from what you would have to spend for just regular electricity. But if they could make it affordable and then financeable, and also, I think, allow you to write the whole thing off on your income tax, I think more and more people would start putting units in like that. I know I would.
I think, in fact, there's a solar panel factory close to where I live in Maryland, and I toured that facility a few years ago. They're getting to the point now where the solar panels aren't add-on clip-ons that you put on your roof. They're actually making them so they're integral parts of your house, like siding. And
yeah, they look just like it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't look like a solar panel anymore. And as they build more and more of these, the old supply and demand curve, as there's a bigger market, the unit price is dropping lower and lower.
Well, like they're doing with some cell phone towers, you could probably even have solar-powered trees made, and it would look just like a nice tree, couldn't you? And then let that feed right into the house.
You probably could, yeah. There's a lot of applications of solar power.
I've invented something here, David.
I won't tell anybody until you get the copyright.
That's right. Let's get it to market. What about China? China's coming up with what they call low-temp helium reactors, which are safe and a pretty good answer to their energy problems.
Well, China does have some energy problems. They get a lot of their electricity from burning coal, and that has consequences in terms of air pollution and hurting people with emphysema and other respiratory problems. They have one of the largest nuclear power development programs on the planet right now. And that it partly reflects that they don't have as many other choices as the United States have.
There seems to be a pretty big controversy with what we are going to do with nuclear waste and where we're going to store it at the Yucca Mountains. What's happening there?
Well, 2 years ago, the Department of Energy recommended that Yucca Mountain be the repository for our spent nuclear waste. The president accepted that recommendation from the Department of Energy. The next step is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission must evaluate that site and determine whether it can be licensed for repository. The state of Nevada, where Yucca Mountain is located, is not real keen to becoming the nuclear dump of the United States.
Do they have a say-so in the matter?
They have. They're exercising that say-so right now in the courts. The way the law is written, though, a majority of the other states can override Nevada's veto.
You're kidding.
And Nevada has zero.
So let's not put it in our state. Let's put it in his.
Right.
And we've got the right to tell you that.
That's great. Yeah, it was the Nuclear Waste Act is the federal legislation that started all this. The people of Nevada affectionately refer to it as the Screw Nevada Bill. But that's basically the way the system is. Right now, all the sides are exercising or paying a lot of lawyer fees to take that next step. Even if that court battle turns out in the Yucca Mountains deemed to be the site, it's going to be probably another 10 years before the first nuclear waste bundle or spent fuel bundle gets shipped from wherever it is now.
I'm sure the state I was born in, Michigan, and my state that I live in, Missouri, would not want any nuclear waste dumped in its state, would it?
That's correct. You know, both of those states have nuclear power plants that they would like to send their spent fuel to Nevada or someplace else.
So it just doesn't sound fair for people who live in Nevada to be able to get that.
Well, the legislation probably took that into mind. They didn't pick the site that was the best from a geological standpoint. They picked a state that had not many people, not much political power, not much ability to fight what the other states wanted.
So let me ask you this then. I mean, we are having the waste. It is real. What would you do with it? Where'd you put it?
Well, the original incarnation of the bill was going to look at 10 sites across the United States and determine among those 10 locations which was the best geologically to be that repository. They were looking at sites in the state of Washington, New Hampshire, Texas, Kansas, I believe, including Nevada, to try to determine what was, given the choices that this country has, what is the safest choice among them. Well, that wasn't working out real well because the people in New Hampshire didn't want it, and they had more political clout than Nevada did. So the law got changed to be, let's just put it in Nevada. And when the Department of Energy was evaluating whether Nevada was a good place or not, whether Yucca Mountain would work or not, every time they came up with something that suggested the answer would be no, they changed the criteria so that the answer would be yes. And that's not the right way to do it. You know, if you put it all in the right place and that place is wrong, we've wasted a lot of time and we've put a lot of people in harm's way. One of the worst problems with any place you put is if the stuff leaks out, gets into the groundwater, you can poison a lot of people and make cleanup virtually impossible. So you can't afford to do it wrong.
The president's energy bill called for building 1,300 new fossil fuel and nuclear power plants. Do we know how many nuclear power plants that would have called for?
I believe it was 50 nuclear power plants by the year 2020. It's not likely that we'll see anywhere close. It's reminiscent of President Nixon's boast that we'd have 1,000 nuclear power plants by the year 2000. We came up much, much shy of that.
Are they building any new ones now, and where are they?
They're not building any in the United States. There are some nuclear power plants being built in China and Taiwan. And
Iran. We know that for sure, because that'll be taken out pretty soon.
That's North Korea. Some of the countries are using them for purposes other than making electricity, but there are no groundbreakings planned in the United States anytime soon.
Now, let me ask you something. If we take out the nuclear power plant in Iran, I don't know how far it is in construction, but if we took it out, blew it up, would that create a danger, some kind of radiation or fallout danger?
Well, that's been done before. I believe it was 1981, September of 1981,
took out the Iraqi plant, right?
That's correct. And they did it, they basically blew it up. They dropped 16 bombs and 15 of them hit the target, so it was pretty good targeting at least. They timed it so that they did it before the fuel was loaded, before the plant was contaminated, so that the only ones in harm's way were the few. They did it on a Sunday, too, so there weren't many workers at the facility. So anybody outside the plant or downwind of the plant wasn't in jeopardy. If you wait until the plant operates.
Yeah, that's what I mean. What would happen if you wait until the nuclear elements are in that plant, it's up and running? What happens then?
If you do it then you can you're likely to release a radioactive cloud that can kill people downwind and also contaminate the land such that it has to remain uninhabitable for decades. So if you're going to do it, you do it before that point, not afterwards.
Are we working toward a disaster on this planet? If something of any major plant, you know, explodes, worse than Chernobyl?
We're running the risk more and more every day of repeating a Chernobyl-type disaster. That accident occurred in 1986. There are regions of the former Soviet Union today that are uninhabitable due to the radioactive contamination, even though they're 100 miles away from the facility. they were so heavily contaminated by that accident that they're just uninhabitable today and will remain that way for decades. Nuclear power plants in the United States can have that kind of bad day. Nuclear power plant owners and people living around nuclear power plants in the United States can't go down to State Farm or Allstate or Prudential and get insurance against that kind of disaster because it's so catastrophic that private insurance companies won't undertake the risk.
No, they won't do that.
The federal government provides that liability protection.
I'm going to mention something that a would-be terrorist has already thought of because I don't want to give them a blueprint. But if they hijacked a jet and crashed it into a power plant, it could be a problem.
Well, if you listen to the industry and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, if the terrorists in 9/11 had dived those planes on nuclear power plants instead of the World Trade Center, you wouldn't even have been able to detect the radiation at the fence boundaries. That's a lie. That is a lie that they're telling. And they know it's a lie. That's the worst part of it. They're basing that analysis on the terrorists aiming the aircraft on the containment dome, that big rounded structure you see at nuclear power plant.
Yeah.
Those walls are 3 to 5 feet thick, reinforced concrete, and they may, most likely, would keep even a large aircraft out. But terrorists aren't stupid enough to aim for the hardest part of the plant. The control rooms and other areas of the plants are located outside of that concrete dome.
And they already know that.
They know that there are drawings available on the Internet that show exactly where those things are located. There was a study a few years ago by the owner of a nuclear power plant, I won't mention the name, but that concluded that a traffic helicopter was heavy enough and flew fast enough to end up in its control room. And those aren't the biggest things flying today, and also lead to a meltdown was a part of their conclusion. So, you know, the risk is real. We think that there's things that can be done to minimize that risk, but the government and the industry are doing a disservice by saying that there's no way that could cause any damage, because that's a lie.
Have you heard that people have been taking pictures of these power plants?
We have. In fact, we were working with a reporter in Vermont shortly after 9/11 who was talking about the security at the nearby Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant. And the paper's photographer had gone out to take a picture of the site as for a story they were doing and was arrested on charges of treason, even though that they were on a public roadway.
Yeah.
But the pictures themselves are available all over the place.
All right, stay with us, David. We'll be back with another hour with you, and we're going to open up the phone lines to give everybody an opportunity. It's based on all the fast blasts I'm getting. You might as well jump aboard with me, too. So the phone lines are open. David Lochbaum, my guest, and I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com.